I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. In this episode, we're going to talk about a theory that sounds a bit like the plot of a disaster movie. Here's how it goes. It begins in a mine shaft in China's Yunnan province, in the southwest corner of the country. It's pitch dark down there, covered in fungus and foul-smelling bat excrement. It's a breeding ground for infectious coronaviruses that reside in bats before jumping into other species. That's why it's of interest to Shi Zhengli, the pioneering Chinese scientist who discovered the source of the SARS epidemic and whose colleagues call her Batwoman in admiration. The year is 2012, and she and her team enter the cave dressed in full protective equipment. They place nets at the mouth of the mine and wait for nightfall to catch bats mid-flight. Then they take their samples and travel 1,000 miles into central China, where their lab, the Wuhan Center for Disease Control and Prevention, is based. As we know, it's in this city, 7 years later in 2019, that a novel coronavirus emerges that is deadly to humans.
We're going to begin here with the outbreak of a mystery virus in China that now has the World Health Organization on edge. At least 4 people have died and hundreds more are sick, though there are concerns 5 times as many people could be infected.
When Chinese authorities notify the World Health Organization, they focus their attention on a local wet market selling exotic animals as food. But a few miles away is Shi Zhengli's lab, where the coronavirus sample taken from that bat cave in 2012 shows a 96% match to COVID-19. And so a theory begins to take hold. Could there be a link between this lab and the outbreak?
Experts say the virus started in the Chinese city of Wuhan, but it is now spreading across Asia. Remy Innocencio.
This idea, strongly denied by China, has been dismissed by many scientists as a wild conspiracy. And the idea is still treated with extreme skepticism. But President Joe Biden has now demanded that his intelligence services interrogate the origins of COVID-19. And he's asked them to include this theory that it escaped from a lab in their investigation. Today, what is the Wuhan lab leak theory and how seriously should we take it? It's Monday, the 7th of June. Anushka Rastana is the presenter of Today in Focus, where this episode first aired.
Peter Beaumont, you've had a very interesting task recently, looking into the re-emergence of the so-called lab leak theory. At the start of the pandemic, the thinking was that COVID-19 had come from a seafood market in Wuhan. But even back then, this idea that it had really escaped from a lab in the city was doing the rounds. Who was pushing it at the beginning?
When you get new disease outbreaks, you often get some, you know, conspiracy theories around them. So when the first SARS virus appeared, there were claims that it had been created by the Americans and, you know, it infected China. You know, the same with Ebola, the same with even Lyme disease, you know, these constant refrain in this area that diseases come somehow from biological weapons programs.
No, the Chinese Communist Party is they're knowingly responsible for this. They're the enemy of the Chinese people. They're the enemy of the citizens of the United States, and they're enemy of mankind. And they have to be held accountable, and they have to be held responsible for
this.
I mean,
early on, Steve Bannon was one of the people pushing that extreme theory. But then you have people like Trump and Mike Pompeo.
And my question is, have you seen anything at this point that gives you a high degree of confidence that the Wuhan Institute of Virology was the origin of this virus?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
And what gives you a high degree of confidence that this originated from the Wuhan Institute of Virology?
I can't tell you that. I'm not allowed to tell
and
you.
And a lot of the usual suspects in right-wing broadcasting, you know, Fox News, those kind of people.
Dealing with it right now today, if China has unleashed biological, chemical biological warfare on the world, not only the United States, but on the world, that I think it is the beginning of a new Cold War, which they have started. And the United States needs to stand up to the Chinese.
It was quite a loosely defined theory at first, which is why people were immediately shunned it so quickly. It was like, well, look, there's this laboratory here. It's not far from the seafood market. Therefore, there must be some kind of a connection.
You know, if I think back to that time, there was all sorts of things being thrown around. There was even COVID being caused by 5G masks. We had BT engineers being attacked.
Police in Quebec. This has fast become a familiar sight. A cellular tower set ablaze.
Or that it was all a big hoax and it didn't even exist.
There's no evidence of any pandemic right now, of any new disease. There's no evidence of a new virus.
It felt as if the lab leak theory was in a bracket with them, that it was absurd, and even that it was driven by anti-Asian racism. What was it that was making people dismiss the theory so strongly?
Well, I mean, quite early on, I mean, some of the scientific community were looking at it, going deep into the kind of the family trees of these viruses. And they were seeing what they expected to see from, you know, a naturally occurring virus that spilled over from an animal population. And so, you know, that's where the scientific consensus was.
There were different types of conspiracies doing the rounds, weren't there? The more extreme idea of a deliberate act. And then I guess the thing you heard more commonly, that this could be an accidental leak from the Wuhan lab. China said the idea was insane. The World Health Organization travelled there and said there wasn't any evidence to support what it called the Trump administration's speculative claims. 27 scientists even wrote to The Lancet in solidarity with scientists in China, condemning the conspiracy theories and saying that the evidence overwhelmingly pointed to the idea of COVID-19 originating naturally in wildlife, the animal theory, if you like. Can you explain that theory?
Coronaviruses, they jump from reservoir species into intermediate species sometimes and then into humans. The experience that medical researchers and scientists have had with this kind of group of coronaviruses from the SARS outbreak in 2002-2003 with MERS, they've seen a, you know, fairly similar picture, you know, began in bat populations and then moved into intermediate hosts of different kinds, something like palm civets or in dromedaries. There is this risk that this new class of diseases that can infect humans and can have serious consequences.
Okay, but over time, the actual source of COVID-19 wasn't found. And we increasingly heard of early cases not linked to that wet market in Wuhan.
Out of quarantine, the WHO experts can finally begin their investigation on the ground. The question now is, are they going to be taken for a ride?
And the World Health Organization returned to Wuhan in February this year, didn't they? Tell me about that.
One thing to be absolutely clear about is that there was a lot of political to and froing about what the nature of any investigation to Wuhan should be. There was political pressure on the World Health Organization. At the same time, you know, they were in the business of trying to do this diplomatic negotiation to gain access to Wuhan to look at it. And, you know, part of those negotiations were they were constrained in what they were allowed to go and look at. Essentially, they went to look at the believed animal origins.
World Health Organization experts have visited a Chinese laboratory on their hunt for the origins of COVID-19. The investigators left the Wuhan Institute of Virology earlier Wednesday.
And I guess that is why, when they were there, there was reported criticism that they only got 3 hours inside the lab and that they had limited access to the raw data of the earliest cases of COVID-19. But they did go, they did do this investigation. What did they say afterwards?
When they came back, I mean, they say that they believe that it's highly likely that it's jumped between species and that it's highly unlikely that it's come from a lab leak.
All the work that has been done on the virus and trying to identify its origin continue to point towards a natural reservoir of this virus and similar viruses in bat population.
The head of the World Health Organization, who is politically astute, he sees what they've brought back. He can see what's missing. And so he says that he doesn't think that the lab leak theory has been investigated enough.
Chinese side. But more interesting than the findings of this report, the conclusions of this report, is the timing of this statement by the head of the WHO, Dr. Tedros, who chose this moment to criticize the fact that the investigators in Wuhan had not enough access to any of the raw data in order to do their work fully, and also in contradiction with the findings of the report, said that the lab leak theory required further probing and further investigation.
And meanwhile, you're getting that from the WHO, but you've also got a huge change in the US. You know, last year people dismissed the theory, at least in part, because of where it was coming from. Here was a president telling people to inject themselves with bleach and now offering no evidence on this. Some of the shock jocks who were pushing this theory had very questionable motives and were folding it in with other anti-China rhetoric. Given that we now have a new administration, how has that changed the conversation on this in the US?
I think two things have happened. And on the one hand, you know, as some of the members of WHO have said publicly, they invited the United States to give them any intelligence they thought they had on the lab leak theory. It's not as if that has been forthcoming. You have these claims that are being made, but, you know, during the Trump administration, people are not putting their money where their mouth is on this. Then you have the change to a much more cautious and diplomatic Biden administration. He's seen as being, you know, vulnerable on the whole being tough on China line.
Today, the president asked the intelligence community to redouble their efforts to collect and analyze information that could bring us closer to a definitive conclusion and to a report back to him in 90 days.
Against the background of this, that you see Biden announcing this review of the intelligence. And if you look at what he says there's no certainty in the intelligence community's in intelligence organizations. Two lean towards the natural outbreak. One leans a little bit more towards the lab leak theory. And, you know, in a lot of ways, a year into this, I mean, he is saying, go back and do the work properly and come back and tell me what you really know. And that's where we are now. It's almost like a new beginning in some respects.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Biden, with so much less baggage when it comes to diplomacy than Trump, is in a stronger position to initiate a serious conversation about this theory. And he has given US intelligence 90 days to report back on both this and the theory that it naturally emerged from animals. We'll wait to see what that says. But let's just interrogate what we know about this right now. I guess it all begins with the work of Xi Zhenglin, who I mentioned at the start, who has collected samples of coronavirus in bats. Tell me about that work.
Let's start at the beginning. There was an outbreak in 2012 where some miners who were working with bat guano got sick. She took samples. That was sequenced. I mean, it's known as RATG13. And when you look at it, it's probably the closest in lineage of different coronaviruses in animals and humans that have been identified to COVID-19. She has actually written about this in journals like Nature. So that's how we know about it. There's no great mystery there.
Okay, I can see why this is compelling to some. A handful of people fall sick and the scientists come in. They collect samples of coronavirus from the copper mine that these men were working in. And then they carry it 1,000 miles to Wuhan, which some years later becomes the epicenter of a terrible pandemic. What were they actually doing with samples in the lab?
One of the theories that's been doing the rounds is that somehow that they were able to do this so-called sort of gain-of-function research, genetic manipulation of this particular virus, and that this made it more dangerous. Now, this kind of research is controversial, I mean, because it makes the virus more infectious, but it's also designed to try and understand how more infectious pathogens that might emerge might work.
And I guess it's important to say that they have denied doing the gain of function work that you've talked about on this particular sample.
If you believe what the Chinese and what her team has told the WHO researchers, then they managed to genetically sequence that bat coronavirus, but they were never able to culture it. You know, they know what it looks like, but they never played with it.
One thing that is really interesting is that the idea that this could have been the source of the pandemic was taken seriously by Xi Zhenglin herself. I read how on December the 30th, 2019, she got a phone call telling her about these new cases of pneumonia in Wuhan. And she admitted her first instinct was to panic. She raced back to the lab. She had sleepless nights. So she thought this could be possible, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, the history of lab leaks is kind of, you know, is long and frightening. A British lab sent out live anthrax. I mean, I'm talking about in the last 20 years or so. I mean, SARS itself escaped from two labs in Beijing. During the course of that outbreak, there have been people who've accidentally infected themselves with Ebola in recent memory. It probably wouldn't be surprising, given that her knowledge of the history of lab escapes, that, you know, she would think, oh, I hope this wasn't a lapse at my own laboratory.
You just paused there for the swear word that she probably actually said. And she obviously went back and had a look, didn't she? What did she find?
I mean, she goes back and there's two things that WIVs, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, say they do. I mean, the first thing they do is they look at the genetic sequence from what becomes known as COVID-19, and they look at the samples in their lab, including this one that was taken in the bat cave. They have a sample, which they say they've genetically sequenced, which has a 96% match. But, you know, they are not identical. The other thing that they do is they look at whether members of staff have been infected. So when the WHO team goes to Wuhan and visits the lab, they're told that serology that's been done on Wuhan staff has come back as negative.
The accident theory regained traction this week after a U.S. intelligence report found that three lab staffers in Wuhan were hospitalized with COVID-like symptoms in November of 2019.
Tension is then created by the fact that someone in the U.S. intelligence community leaked to the Wall Street Journal saying, you know, there are these three staff who got sick in November 2019. The problem is we don't know very much about that claim. It's not clear what they were sick with. It's not even clear what the source of this intelligence is, except that it's non-US intelligence that we shared with them and is so far unverified.
For all the kind of questions around this right now, the other side of this is that it's really important work, isn't it? It's kind of cutting edge work that, although there are clearly controversies around how far you should push it, could help us in the future when it comes to pandemics. And in fact, I read that even the US had funded this lab in the past. Have they had any security concerns about it?
Yes. I mean, there was a report from the US consulate saying that there was a US consulate in Wuhan saying that they had some concerns. But I mean, I remember sort of like having contacts with a US research institute that had been heavily involved in looking at the work that was being done in Wuhan. And their version is that it was exactly the same as any kind of institute you'd find anywhere else in the world, and that it seemed to be well run.
What were the concerns?
Some of the concerns were around, you know, training for technicians, you know, whether the protocols were necessarily good enough. I mean, the kind of things you would expect to get picked up as safety concerns in most places, I'd imagine.
Okay, so as yet, some interesting stuff about the possibility of these samples coming from animals, but then being released via a leak. But pretty strong arguments against it, including that the sample in the lab doesn't actually match COVID-19. Any evidence really is entirely circumstantial. But on the other hand, the more likely theory, the animal theory, which most scientists seem to still prefer, has its own problems too, because it has been over a year and they still haven't found a source.
I mean, this is one of the big issues. I mean, there's this kind of assumption that in previous outbreaks, i.e. SARS and MERS, that the intermediate species have been quickly identified. That hasn't always been the case. I mean, there were strong suspicions with SARS that palm civets were the intermediate host, but it took a while, I mean, years, for that to be absolutely established. And with MERS, even now, it's not still completely understood. So, I mean, part of this story is kind of, well, we've had a year of this with COVID-19. Why don't we understand it? Well, the answer is that often it takes quite a long time.
Fair enough. And I really don't want to sound like a conspiracist here, but there is one other big issue that people point to, and that is the fact that Wuhan doesn't have bat caves in its vicinity. And the distance between these bat caves, where coronaviruses were found, to the city is 1,000 miles. And there aren't any recorded COVID cases along the route, are there?
I mean, that's the great mystery. I mean, it's quite clear that Wuhan was a major amplification event for COVID-19. There was genetic material collected from the wet market. The genetic sequencing of the early cases shows that people associated with the market had near identical versions of the virus. So you can say that it was a very important event in COVID-19's life. But I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that it started there.
But we begin tonight with the growing concern as the toll from that deadly coronavirus now
grows. So then the question is, well, how did it get to this market?
And in the city of Wuhan, where the outbreak began, patients now in isolation, all trains and planes out of that city halted just tonight.
One of the main kind of points of suspicion still is that somehow it was related to, you know, wildlife food trade or, you know, farmed wildlife trade. The fact that a year on, we kind of know where it took hold, but we don't actually know where it started, is still one of the things that allows a lot of room for a lot of speculation.
Next, will we ever know the origins of COVID-19? And if we do, what difference would it make?
Peter, the reason we want to know the answer to this is because the COVID-19 pandemic has been absolutely devastating for the planet. At least 3.5 million people have died, and economies the world over have ground to a halt, taking away livelihoods with them. So, of course, it matters where it all began. But does understanding the origin actually make a difference to the disease itself and to how we deal with it?
I mean, right now, it feels like, you know, quite a big distraction. We've just had a World Health Assembly. The focus of part of it was supposed to be on getting more vaccines to more people more fairly. It's not as if you can turn back the clock and say this pandemic isn't, you know, you can't wish it away. So, you know, at the moment, you feel that there should be a lot more focus on dealing with the consequences of the pandemic. But at the same time, it's clearly incredibly important, given the recent history of these new and very dangerous coronaviruses, to understand where they're coming from, how they're transmitted, you know, to understand absolutely everything against them, so that, you know, the next coronavirus that emerges from a bat cave somewhere doesn't kill millions more people. So, I mean, it's kind of how do you balance those priorities? There are some people who are working in global health who are quite frustrated by the way it's turned into a kind of a Yaboo sucks competition between China and the US that seems to be informed by politics as much as by kind of global health priorities.
Look, I know that this is still the least likely explanation of where COVID-19 comes from, but from everything you've told me, it is not impossible. So given that, is it the case with hindsight that this theory wasn't taken seriously enough because of the people talking it up who were so clearly motivated negatively because of China? Was the theory too quickly dismissed?
I think it probably was to a degree. I mean, given the reputation that a lot of these people had for truthfulness, you know, for their very partisan approach on international issues, to their absolute willingness to sort of tell lies and spin fantasies, I think that probably got in the way of good scientific rigor, even perhaps kind of rigor from the intelligence communities.
And that's the US, but the flip side of this is China. It is true, as you've said, that Xi has published papers in Nature, but let's be honest, China isn't known for its transparency.
I mean, China is not only not known for its transparency. I mean, it's been actively churning out misinformation about coronavirus. It only has itself to blame for the way in which it's approached sort of transparency about this issue. I mean, China is as much to blame as the Trump administration for casting a toxic fog around this. But, you know, just because someone is being obstructive and lacking transparency doesn't necessarily, as some people believe, supply you with a motive. All it tells you is that a country that does not have a great culture of openness and transparency isn't being open and transparent. I mean, it's not a smoking gun in and of itself.
And given all of that, where does it leave us overall on balance? Where are scientists with this right now? And are we ever going to know the truth?
I suspect, and, you know, I'm quite pessimistic about this. I mean, the limited investigation that got done by the WHO was extremely difficult to negotiate diplomatically. I think, you know, the more there is a focus on this, the more that it's politicized, the more that it's kind of presented as some kind of story from Dr. Evil's lab. I mean, the less that you can see that China will cooperate with future investigations into it. And, you know, it may be the consequence of all this is that perhaps we will never find out.
Are you basically saying, Peter, we shouldn't be doing this podcast?
Well, I'm not saying we shouldn't be doing this podcast, but I mean, you know, it was politicized from the get-go. So what can you do?
We're examining it very responsibly.
I hope so.
Peter Beaumont, thank you very much.
Cheers.
That's it for today. This episode first appeared on our global news podcast, Today in Focus, made by the Guardian team in London. If you liked this episode, you should check out and subscribe to Today in Focus. It was produced by Sammy Kent and Courtney Youssef, sound design by Dominic Fitzgerald. The executive producers of Today in Focus are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. Additional production by Joe Koning. Okay, catch you next time.